Charlas de la Noche. Palabras con imagen. El análisis de los acontecimientos que influyen en nuestra vida con el periodista Francisco Durán Rosillo.
Frank Durán Rosillo te saluda y los saluda a todos ustedes, su amiga María Celeste Arraraz, para invitarlos a que se suscriban a mi canal de YouTube, María Celeste Arraraz, tal como mi nombre, donde les informo todas las semanas sobre entrevistas que tienen un tema que ayuda a mejorarnos como personas y de paso son interesantes. Las pueden encontrar en mi canal de YouTube, así que los espero. Y se suscriben gratis.
Hola amigos, entre altas medidas de seguridad se prepara ya y se inicia la Cumbre de las Américas, en la cual la ciudad de Los Ángeles, California, viene a ser pues el lugar oficial. Y qué mejor lugar, dado que es la segunda ciudad con más mexicanos y más latinos después del Distrito Federal. Pero algo que nos llamó la atención es que el servicio secreto empezó la seguridad del lugar desde mucha antelación. Ya casi se hablaba de meses, cuando apenas estaban organizando el edificio y todo, y el servicio secreto ya practicaba sus revisiones de rutina. ¿Por qué el servicio secreto? No solamente porque va el presidente Biden y su comitiva, sino porque van a estar presentes presidentes de otras naciones. Entonces, ya desde este momento, Los Ángeles, aquí el servicio secreto cuida a la vicepresidenta Kamala Harris, y ya está siendo blindado el lugar desde varias cuadras a la redonda, en que los agentes están vigilando tierra, aire y también de manera cibernética todo el lugar donde se va a llevar a cabo esta reunión. Fue muy polémico que a algunos presidentes no los invitaron porque obviamente han sido dictadores, tiranos, que no practican ni respetan la democracia. Fueron defendidos por un presidente que no vale la pena ni mencionar su nombre y pues no vienen, pero realmente no se necesita la presencia de estos hombres que realmente estrangulan no solo la democracia, sino también la economía de sus países. Entonces, aquí se está llevando en esta reunión foros de todo tipo, principalmente aquellos que van destinados a encontrar soluciones para los pueblos de los países que vienen a estar representados. Ahora, pues, por México, bien va el canciller, viene el canciller Marcelo Ebrard, pero no tiene caso. Sigue diciendo que va a representar la política de López Obrador, pues mejor que se quede allá. La verdad, no viene a aportar, no viene a intercambiar, a recibir información tan interesante, porque en estas reuniones no solamente se hablan de los foros económicos, también se hablan de los foros de la democracia, de la participación. Y hoy el secretario de Estado norteamericano, Anthony Blinken, inició con una conferencia muy interesante en la cual puso de manifiesto que es importantísimo mantener lo que es el periodismo libre. Y se refirió mucho a que México, no solamente el periodismo es presa de los políticos, de la tortura, del chantaje, de la intimidación, sino que también el secretario Blinken habló de que es muy triste en este momento de que sean estos países los que más muertos o periodistas muertos han tenido. Y también habló del tema de Nicaragua, de Cuba, de Venezuela, donde no se puede ejercer el periodismo libre. Y lamentó que en México ya no solamente no se puede ejercer el periodismo libre, sino que se está asesinando a más periodistas que ninguna otra etapa de la historia de este país. Y lo que es peor, las autoridades de justicia no hacen nada por evitarlo, por proteger la libertad de expresión. Pero vamos a escuchar de viva voz al secretario de Estado y posteriormente hacemos un pequeño resumen de la traducción. Permítanme un segundo.
Aspiration. It is a challenging path. I suspect you know that already. But I couldn't be more inspired to see rising journalists here, and I'm really looking forward to reading your bylines and hearing you and seeing you in the media over the years ahead. So, starting tomorrow, the 9th Summit of the Americas is going to bring together governments, civil society, youth, the private sector, and citizens from across our hemisphere to try to see how together, we can tackle the fundamental problems that our societies face and do a better job at delivering for our people. That is the mission that we set for ourselves. In every country in the hemisphere, for every goal that we want to achieve, for every problem affecting the lives of our people, a free, independent press is essential. We see that in the reporting around the hemisphere and the world, including by some people who are here today. Whether that's digging into the toughest topics like corruption or abuses by security services, or lifting up the stories of grassroots leaders who are finding solutions to complex problems, like the youth activists in small island states who are helping their communities adapt to rising seas and other changes that are brought on by climate change. Reporting on issues like these shows how a free, independent press is quite literally a cornerstone of healthy democracies. And at its core is an idea. The idea that accurate information is a public good, one that helps people understand the events and forces shaping their lives, spotlight problems and solutions that they otherwise might not see, and fundamentally empower citizens to engage meaningfully in their communities, their countries, in the world. In democracies, we often look to the media to provide this public good. It's also the reason it's so important that governments like ours are open to scrutiny, to questions from the media, even when occasionally it's not the most comfortable thing to do. And you can take that from me as well. When I had the honor of becoming Secretary of State, one of the very first things I did was to reinstate the daily press briefing at the State Department. And our spokesperson, Ned Price, is here with us today. It's why, wherever I travel around the world, I make a point of holding press conferences where I take questions from local media, as well as with some of our media colleagues who travel with us around the world. It's why I'll take questions from you when I get done with these remarks. Yet today, we see that the right to freedom of expression, including freedom of the press, faces profound challenges in our own hemisphere and around the world. Challenges that, if left unaddressed, could threaten the foundations of our democracies. So what I'd like to do in this time that I have now is to highlight three of the challenges that we see and what the United States is doing, together with journalists, media organizations, NGOs, multilateral organizations, philanthropies, the private sector, and other governments, what we're all trying to do to tackle them. The first challenge, this will not be news to anyone, is disinformation. Many speakers today have highlighted how governments and non-state actors are seizing on vulnerabilities in our media ecosystem to create, to disseminate, to amplify false or misleading information. We've seen how these falsehoods can polarize communities, poison the public square, undermine people's trust in health systems, government institutions, in democracy itself. Today, the United States is launching the first hub of the Digital Communication Network of the Americas. Since creating the DCN in 2015, we've actually helped build a network of more than 8,000 journalists, educators, communicators, and new media professionals, public officials, and others around the world who are working to combat state-sponsored disinformation and propaganda. The network does this by developing and sharing evidence-based tools to help local actors provide people with accurate information. Take one example, the pandemic. We've seen governments and other actors intentionally spread false narratives about COVID-19's origin, its transmission, and treatments in an effort to stoke fear, to sow doubt, including about safe and effective vaccines, to erode trust in democracy itself, including deliberately targeting Spanish language social media in this region. The spread, the reach of disinformation online is quite simply staggering. One study that measured social media traffic over a 90-day period of the pandemic found that the entire World Health Organization COVID-19 site received only 25,000 social media engagements compared to 2.1 million hits for a single false story claiming that the coronavirus is a bioweapon stolen from Canada. That's wrong, by the way. In response, DCN has connected investigative journalists, data scientists, public health officials to share effective strategies on disseminating accurate information about COVID-19 and debunking harmful myths on social media. The strength of DCN is in the diversity and flatness of the network that's been created. It doesn't try to prescribe one single solution, but what it does is it makes it easier for participants to learn from one another's responses, whether through webinars or trainings, online learning hubs or research exchanges, even games and apps. The new Americas chapter will complement DCN hubs in Africa and Europe, further broadening our network of partners and the ideas that they bring to the table. Even as we take steps to counter disinformation, we have to always guard against measures that give governments overly broad powers to criminalize, to censor, or otherwise quash freedom of expression, as we've seen in the rash of so-called fake news laws passed by governments, some of which have been abused to harass or lock up journalists whose critical reporting the governments didn't like. This brings me to a second challenge: the ongoing threats, harassment, violence faced by media workers across the region. You all know this because many of you are living it. At least 17 journalists have been killed in this hemisphere in this year, according to the UNESCO Observatory of Killed Journalists, including most recently Yesenia Molinedo and Sheila Johanna Garcia, the director and a reporter of the news website El Veraz in Veracruz, Mexico, shot to death on May the 9th. No region in the world is more dangerous for journalists. Crimes like these persist in no small part because the people who order them and carry them out are so rarely held accountable. That sends a message that these attacks can continue with impunity. Repressive officials are also using new technologies to monitor journalists, to surveil their private communications, a practice unearthed, fittingly enough, through very dogged reporting. Governments are using sweeping legislation to quash free expression, as we saw in the recent slate of amendments adopted by El Salvador in March and in April of this year. In Cuba, Nicaragua, Venezuela, the simple act of carrying out investigative journalism is a crime. In Nicaragua, journalists and political opposition candidates Miguel Mora and Miguel Mendoza, newspaper publisher Juan Lorenzo Holman, are currently unjustly imprisoned after being sentenced under abusive legislation in trials that lack basic due process. Dozens of independent journalists have fled the country due to persecution and threats, including Anibal Toronto, Luis Chavarria Galeano, Jackson Orozco, who are with us this week at the summit. In Cuba, independent journalists are subjected to systemic abuses, including house arrest for days, weeks at a time, beatings, forced exile. When individual journalists are attacked, when they're persecuted, when they're imprisoned, when they're targeted in any other way, the chilling effects reach far beyond the immediate victims. Sometimes this can lead to the shuttering of a publication. Other times it can lead other reporters to self-censor or to leave the profession entirely. So, here are some of the things that we're trying to do about that. The United States is working across the region to strengthen the rule of law, investing in training judges and prosecutors to investigate and prosecute such attacks, as well as those on human rights defenders and other civil society leaders. We consistently speak up and speak out about attacks on journalists in every country, in public and in private. We document government's efforts to curtail freedom of expression in our annual human rights report. We're deepening our engagement with multilateral bodies that advocate for freedom of expression and the safety of journalists around the world, using our seat at the table to try to make them even more effective. One of the reasons that it was so important for the United States to come back into these international organizations was to be able to assert some of this leadership at these tables. And we're helping to stand up new bodies to address emerging threats. We're very proud to join the new OAS, Group of Friends of Freedom of Expression and Journalism, and we welcome the creation of the OAS's new Center for Media Integrity. Luis, thank you for your leadership on this. It's very, very important. And we're deepening our engagement in the Media Freedom Coalition. We're also doing some very practical things that we hope will make a difference. For example, increasing support for journalists who are facing threats of harassment. USAID will provide up to $9 million to support a global defamation defense fund for journalists, which will offer liability coverage for journalists and news organizations targeted with unjust litigation. This is one of the tools that repressive governments use. They try to turn and distort the law against journalists by going after them with lawsuits that they can't afford to defend. We will help make sure that they can defend themselves. The State Department is investing up to $3.5 million to launch a journalism protection platform. That will provide at-risk media professionals with physical and digital security training, psychosocial care, and other assistance when they are in one way or another under attack. Third, we're working to make independent media more sustainable. Put simply, we will not have a vibrant independent press if more and more outlets are shutting down because they can't find a viable business model. The United States is working with business groups, with the private sector, to help independent media become more financially sustainable. We're providing direct financial assistance to at-risk outlets. We've committed $30 million to the International Fund for Public Interest Media, which will focus on assisting media in resource-poor and unstable settings, and $5 million to improve the financial viability of independent media outlets. We're also encouraging other countries to engage in similar means of support. We had, as some of you know, a summit for democracy that President Biden convened last year. One of the main areas of focus of the summit was finding ways collectively to provide support to independent media. In my own judgment, it's hard to think of a smarter investment in our democracies, given the incredibly brave and innovative work that journalists are doing throughout our region. Journalists like Catherine Calderon, who many of you heard from, I think, earlier today. Back in 2015, she was an activist. She was helping to organize demonstrations against corruption in Honduras. She kept running into Jennifer Avila, a journalist who was covering the protests. The more they talked, the more they saw a similar gap. For all the ways Hondurans were hurt by corruption in their everyday lives, no media outlet was conducting independent, rigorous reporting on the problem. That, of course, was no accident. For years, Honduran activists and reporters who tried to document corruption, and in particular women, have been silenced through harassment, through threats, through discrimination, through violence. So, Catherine and Jennifer decided to launch a media outlet that would close that gap, and it was called Contracorrente, or Countercurrent. Since 2015, Countercurrent has flourished. It's unearthed corruption at the highest levels of government, the military, the police, and it's led to high-profile resignations and even prosecutions. Reflecting on the founding of Countercurrent, Catherine said, and I quote, "Now more than ever, I feel it was necessary. We had to exist to be a space where we have the possibility of doing journalism without being silent." The same is true for free independent press across the hemisphere. It has to exist now more than ever for the well-being of our people, for the well-being of our communities, for the well-being of our democracies. The United States is committed to being a partner, not only in protecting this space, but expanding it. Thanks very much.
Pues sí, el secretario de Estado norteamericano Anthony Blinken dejó bien claro que el gobierno de Estados Unidos, de una manera muy diplomática, porque el Departamento de Estado se encarga de las relaciones diplomáticas, va a salvaguardar por la seguridad de los periodistas, va a salvaguardar por la libertad de expresión en el mundo, a la que consideró base de la democracia. Dice que no puede existir una democracia en cualquier lugar del mundo si no hay libertad de expresión. Conceptos muy, muy acertados. También estuvimos viendo que detalló los recientes asesinatos de periodistas en México, tristemente ya conocidos por todos y que nos duelen el corazón, nos hace un nudo en la garganta. Y qué tristeza que que mejor el secretario de Estado norteamericano sienta más respeto por nosotros, por los periodistas mexicanos, y ofrezca empatía profesional, ofrezca pues respetar las garantías del ejercicio en la búsqueda de la verdad, mientras que el gobierno mexicano, bueno, ya vieron Alito, el señor este Moreno, el dirigente del PRI, con todo y que es senador, en una grabación, pues dijo que a los periodistas no había que asesinarlos, había que matarlos de hambre. López Obrador tiene su grupo ahí de aplaudidores y se la ha pasado intimidando periodistas de varios medios. Sin embargo, extraoficialmente les digo, porque hablé con una persona de las autoridades norteamericanas y me dejaron sentir que hay ciertos periodistas y medios muy poderosos en México, pues que reciben sobornos, bribes, me lo dijeron en inglés, bribes, sobornos en efectivo. Y es lógico, ustedes ven los medios y no traen nada de publicidad, nada de anuncio. Y sobreviven, pagan nóminas, pagan esto, pagan lo otro. Y ya hay una investigación de la Agencia Central de Inteligencia en la que se están haciendo compilaciones muy interesantes sobre la credibilidad de ciertos medios, sobre la credibilidad de ciertos periodistas que juegan el doble papel, aparentemente de atacar al gobierno, pero en el fondo son parte de una fuerza controlada que el gobierno quiere tener allí como oposición, como los partidos satélites, vamos, como Alito, como Velasco, que ya vimos en un video pasado que ambos dijeron que el secretario de Gobernación es su hermano, es su amigo, es el que los ayuda. Ahí se demuestra toda la corrupción. Bueno, me dejaron saber que hay medios de comunicación que son sobornados en México hasta por los mismos narcos, con dinero en efectivo producto del trasiego de drogas. Esos medios van a empezar a ser compilados o documentados en una base de datos. No sé con qué finalidad, pero Estados Unidos ya va a empezar a restringir en sus conferencias de prensa a representantes de tales medios que estén recibiendo dinero lavado del narcotráfico, que estén recibiendo dádivas del mismo presidente, que es el benefactor de los carteles y el enemigo de los periodistas. Seguiremos informando sobre esta cumbre de las Américas y este jueves le va a quitar mucha atención a la cumbre de las Américas, ya que las audiencias sobre la toma del Capitolio el 6 de enero van a ser en prime time, en horario estelar, y van a permitir que los canales de televisión de todo Estados Unidos transmitan en vivo las declaraciones de estas investigaciones acerca de la toma del Capitolio y la destrucción de gran cantidad de ventanas y puertas de este edificio tan importante para la democracia, para el desarrollo de iniciativas que se convierten en ley, y estaremos informando. No es necesario que vaya López Obrador. Marcelo Ebrard no va a hacer ninguna participación significativa, va a ir de palero de Daniel Ortega, de Nicolás Maduro, de Miguel Díaz Canel y de su jefe, López Obrador. ¿Qué puede aportar? Nada. Un atorrante completamente y es un parásito del gobierno mexicano, que solo se está robando el sueldo como se robó el dinero de la línea 12 del metro cuando fue jefe de la oficina de la Ciudad de México. Tristemente, pero esos son nuestros políticos y por eso posiblemente no quieren ir a estas reuniones. Se sienten incómodos porque no son gente que trabaja, no son gente que ve por el bien común. Tienen al país sin medicinas, con más pobres, la gente desempleada, las empresas ya sacando sus capitales porque no ven seguridad. Y tristemente, el gobierno de México haciendo cada día más lazos estrechos de amistad y de relaciones, no solamente con estos parásitos de Cuba, Nicaragua, Beatriz y Venezuela, Pajés,
la
sino
voz más
con
acreditada de la opinión editorial en México,
Vladimir Putin de Rusia
de la noche,
y el presidente de China, que son las mafias más peligrosas del mundo, la mafia rusa y la mafia china. Ya lo dijimos la semana pasada en un reportaje del jefe de la DEA, que describió.
Buenas noches, Frank. Un placer, como siempre, participar en charlas de esta noche. Hasta aquí mi comentario. Buenas noches, Frank. Y buenas noches a todos quienes nos
Muchas
escuchan
gracias.
En Estados
buenas
Unidos,
noches.
México
y
en otras partes
y
del mundo.
Mañana.
Soy Beatriz Pajés. Hasta la próxima.
Frank Durán Rosillo te saluda y los saluda a todos ustedes, su amiga María Celeste Arraraz, para invitarlos a que se suscriban a mi canal de YouTube, María Celeste Arraraz, tal como mi nombre, donde les informo todas las semanas sobre entrevistas que tienen un tema que ayuda a mejorarnos como personas y de paso son interesantes. Las pueden encontrar en mi canal de YouTube, así que los espero. Y se suscriben gratis.
Escuchaste el análisis de la noticia, transparente como el agua, con el periodista Francisco Durán Rosillo.